All right. Good morning, everyone. It's a real pleasure to be here, and also seeing so many colleagues and friends after years in isolation behind my computer screen, and being here in Paris with such a great program. I'd like to thank the organizers for organizing such a wonderful meeting. What I'd like to do today is talk about our work in which we try to dissect immune selectivity in human cancer, trying to understand what T-cell responses in human tumor lesions recognize, trying to understand how those T-cells, what they look like, and what happens the moment you try to reactivate them. And let's see if that's on. Yes. And in the beginning, I'll start off with a little piece in which I explain our rationale to invest very much in new technology, ex vivo technology, to dissect intratumoral immune responses in human cancer, because I think this fills a niche between the mouse model work and the more classical translational work. And then in the bulk of the talk, I'll move to one technology that we developed, a patient-derived tumor fragment culture system, and then exploit that to understand the mechanism of action of PD-1 blockade. These are my disclosures. As I'm the first one to speak in this immune checkpoint session, I'm showing a slide that many will have seen before, and this is an overview of trials from Merck showing activity of PD-1 blocking agents across many different tumor types. And when you see that, I think there's two things to note. First of all, PD-1 blockade is not something that only works in very restricted tumor types. And secondly, even within each individual tumor type, there are clearly patients who respond in a very beautiful manner, but also patients who progress upon PD-1 blockade. And while PD-1 blocking agents and PD-L1 blocking agents are now very widely used in the clinic, I feel that our understanding of what happens immunologically in those patients is still very limited. And then I'm highlighting in this slide, asking the question, how is immune activity in cancer lesions influenced by PD-1 blockade? And here I've listed some of them, what I think are many things that we do not know. First of all, the T-cells that respond, well, that's actually first assuming that it's T-cells, because there's some people who believe that it may also be myeloid cells. Is there a role for intratumoral T-cells, or is immune reactivation when you administer a PD-1 blocking agent restricted to the lymph node compartment? The state of the T-cells that respond, are these early progenitor cells that people are talking about, or is there actually a role for more dysfunctional or exhausted cells? Is there evidence for functional heterogeneity within individual tumors? Does immune reactivation occur throughout the tumor, or are there hotbeds of immune reactivation? And also, is there functional heterogeneity between human tumors? Do all human tumors respond in exactly the same way the moment you block this pathway? And one effort to try and address this is the use of sequential biopsies, where you treat patients and you take pre-treatment biopsies and post-treatment biopsies and you start looking for the differences. And while I think this is a very valuable effort, and we've also been heavily involved in that, I think it's important to realize there are very significant limitations to that effort. And I've listed two here. If you take sequential biopsies to address these types of questions, you first of all have a very poor temporal resolution. You're often looking at biopsies that are spread out over 8 or 12 weeks, and obviously many things can have happened in that time period. And secondly, and very fundamental, there is no ability to compare. You treat a patient with one antibody or one antibody combination, and you can never ask the question, what if I would have treated in this way? What if I would have compared it to another? And that's where ex vivo models become very valuable, because there you can actually add molecule X, you can inhibit pathway Y, and you can see whether that changes the outcome. So for those kind of reasons, we've developed this PDTF technology, trying to bridge the gap between mouse models and translational research, where I think the mouse models are really great because of their ability to perturb the system. But obviously, it's very hard to know for each individual mouse model which patient population it represents. On the other hand, clinical samples really dealing with the heterogeneity of patients in a very real-world setting, but it's very difficult to move beyond correlative analysis and really show causation. So what we've been trying to do is set up technology, ex vivo human tumor immune models, that give us the ability to perturb, ability to compare interventions, and also the ability to understand intratumoral and interpatient heterogeneity. I'm going to talk a little bit about that today. So this is the core of the system, and I should really call out Daniela Tommen here, who came to my lab with the vision to develop these systems, and she's now pursuing this further as an independent PI at the NKI, so a lot of the credit goes to Daniela. What we did is to collect tumor tissue from hundreds of patients. Now, this is actually a little bit of an outdated slide. Then we dissect this tumor material into tiny fragments, which we call PDTFs. And then we can store those fragments, we can thaw them, and then do ex vivo immunotherapy treatments, controls and treatments, and then compare what are the treatment-induced changes, looking at immune cell activation, soluble mediators, etc. So we can, on one hand, look at what your intervention does to immune activity at the tumor site, but we can also analyze the tumors at baseline and thereby draw correlations between how tumors are influenced by checkpoint blockade and what these tumors look like. So in a first study that was led by Paula Voebel, Marilyn de Bruin, and Lisanne Roelofsen, we asked the question, does PD-1 blockade modulate intratumoral immunity in human cancer lesions? And this was particularly inspired by the work that had led to the suggestion that much of the activity of anti-PD-1 could occur outside of the tumor bed, inside the lymph nodes. So we did this, we took a cohort of tumors, in the end 37, over a mix of different malignancies, some with a high response rate to immune checkpoint blocker antibodies, some with a lower response rate, mostly primary tumors, I should say. And then we treated these tumors with PD-1 blocking agents in these ex vivo cultures. And then after 2 days of culture, we look at a number of T-cell activation markers, but also, and most importantly, at a very large variety of cytokines and chemokines to try and understand how the tumor microenvironment changes. And then for each of these parameters, we plot the delta between the unperturbed condition and the perturbed condition. And just to highlight, we do these cultures for each condition in many cultures in parallel to be able to average out for tumor heterogeneity, something that I'll come back to later. So if you do this, and you do this for a large cohort of patients, what does this look like? So here on the top, we have the patient identifiers, and here on the y-axis of this heat map, you have all the chemokines, cytokines, and T-cell activation markers that we look at. And if you now perform unsupervised clustering of this whole analysis, what you see is that there's clearly a large group of tumors in which there are no substantial changes the moment you block the PD-1 pathway, but there's a second group of tumors where there's clear immune reactivation the moment you block PD-1, PD-L1 interactions. We then, for each of these parameters that we looked at what their value was to contribute to the separation between what we call PDTF non-responders and PDTF responders. So distinguish this from clinical response, but really looking at the immunological response. And what you then can do is you can, if you determine an ROC for each parameter, you can identify those parameters that are most discriminative, so which are best able to pull apart these two tumor groups. And then you see things like CD8 T-cell activation, interferon gamma, CXCL10, etc. And then from these most discriminative parameters, we then created a score that allows us to separate tumors where we say, okay, these are clearly tumors where PD-1 blockade leads to immune reactivation, and these here on the left are tumors where PD-1 blockade really doesn't change very much. And that allows us to then address an important question, and that is, does immune reactivation in a tumor lesion actually have any relationship to clinical response of the patient? And I mentioned that most of these tumors were primary tumors, but a subset of patients progressed and later on in their patient journey was treated with PD-1 blocking agents, so we could correlate that clinical response to the ex vivo response of the primary material. So here I'm showing you this PDTF response score, as I just outlined it in the prior slide, for all these tumors, and here's our cutoff. So these are the responding tumors, and these are the non-responding tumors. And these are then the patients for which we had matched clinical data. And what you see here, so in reddish are all the responding patients, and in gray are all the non-responding patients. There's actually a very nice correlation between capacity of anti-PD-1 to reactivate immune activity in the tumor lesion ex vivo and clinical response of the patient. And then we then validate that for a second cohort of patients, again showing a very nice correlation between intratumoral immune reactivation and clinical response. Okay, so one of the questions I asked earlier on is, what is now the nature of the T cells that are being reactivated by PD-1 blockade? And this is a slide that highlights what's been really an emerging theme in the field, that tumor-reactive T cells, also as the way they sit at the tumor site, they sort of are residing along an axis of dysfunction, where you have these pre or early dysfunctional cells, also progenitor dysfunctional, progenitor exhausted cells, and you have these late dysfunctional cells. And these can be distinguished, for instance, by expression of TCF1 here on the left, and absence here, very high expression of CD39 on the cells that are late dysfunctional. And there's clearly very compelling data in the mouse that it shows that these early cells are essential for durable response to immunotherapy in these mouse models. The question that hasn't been addressed is whether those cells can actually be reactivated by PD-1 blockade in human cancer. And I guess with my career progressing, I've become more and more sympathetic to the more late dysfunctional part of this equation. So we want to address that. So we did actually a very simple experiment with hindsight, and that is take these tumor fragments, treat with anti-PD-1 blocking agents, and then see whether immune reactivation occurs for those T cells that express markers of pre or early dysfunctional cells or the markers of the late dysfunctional cells. And I'll show you the data focusing on CD39. So here we have a stain of T cells. Here you stain PD-1 against CD8, and here you can see that PD-1 actually correlates very nicely with CD39 in this tumor lesion. So these CD39 positive cells are really the exhausted PD-1 bright cells. And what you can then do is, if I now treat these tumor fragments with an anti-PD-1 agent, do I see immune reactivation mostly occurring in this cell compartment or in that cell compartment? Simple experiment, and I think a very clear answer. This is untreated, this is anti-PD-1 treated, and here we stain for 4-1BB, a T-cell activation marker. And what you see is that the immune reactivation really is very clearly present in those cells with very bright CD39 expression. This is then shown this the same kind of thing for a larger cohort of patients. And also, when we look at granzyme B as a measure of immune reactivation in T cells, we see very little happening in the CD39 cells, and we see very clear evidence for immune reactivation in the CD39 positive dysfunctional exhausted cells. So actually, I think that exhausted is not the right word here. These cells still are capable of responding to an intervention. We then focus on a second aspect, and that is this observation that the moment we block the PD-1 pathway, we see this significant change in cytokines throughout the tumor microenvironment. And this sort of comes back to a concept that was introduced by Philippe Bousseau yesterday, and that is the moment T-cell activity occurs in a tumor lesion, I think we should really take into account the effects that this has through cytokine spreading on the entire tumor microenvironment. And here, we've been trying to address that by taking a cohort of tumors that respond to anti-PD-1 treatment, and here I'm showing you sort of the response that they normally show, and then see, can we now start perturbing part of that process and try to dissect what's happening in those tumors? So what do we do? Well, this is the model. You have a tumor cell, you have a T cell that recognizes an antigen, and here you block the PD-1 pathway. The T cell is then able to secrete interferon gamma, and that interferon gamma could then work on many other cells in the tumor microenvironment, B cells, APCs, tumor cells, and that could then lead to a secondary wave of chemokine production. And if this model is correct, you could almost say that these cells become enablers of an immune response, sort of a secondary effect of your PD-1 blockade. So can we now test this? Yes. We can either inhibit at the level of the T cell, so very proximal with an LCK inhibitor. And if we do that, you would expect that you would disrupt the process along the entire axis. But we can also disrupt more downstream at the level of interferon gamma receptor signaling, where we would still expect to see T-cell activation, so the proximal effects of PD-1 blockade, but the secondary effects of PD-1 blockade we would then be able to prevent. So that we did. And here I'm showing you a graph where we, in this case, compare two anti-PD-1 stimulated samples, just showing you that the effects are essentially reproducible, where you see upregulation of CXCL9, CXCL10, CXCL11, reproducibly. But now we can do the same kind of experiments, but add inhibitor in one of the conditions, and then see whether some of the parameters fall out and no longer are on the axis. So here we add an anti-interferon gamma receptor antibody, and lo and behold, what do you see? CXCL9, 11, particularly CXCL10, completely fall out. They are no longer being induced by PD-1 blockade the moment you block interferon gamma receptor signaling. So really arguing for this indirect process where you first have a wave of T-cell activation and then secondary remodeling of the tumor microenvironment. And as a control, the moment we block with LCK inhibitor, it's not just these chemokines that are gone, but actually all activation parameters, also the T-cell activation parameters, are no longer being upregulated by PD-1 blockade. So this fits with, I think, an emerging theme that we should not just think about T-cells of just killing their target cells, but also think about T-cells as modifier of the tumor microenvironment and thereby altering the milieu and inducing secondary and tertiary changes. And to sort of further stress that point, I would like to go back to work that we published now some 2 years ago, in which we addressed this something very similar in a mouse model, where we say, can we now visualize how far a cytokine like interferon gamma spreads in the tumor microenvironment? And I will only go through a little piece of the data, but it highlights an important point. What we did is we created mixed tumors, where there's a small piece of the tumor in which antigen is present and a very large piece where antigen is absent. And in those antigen-negative cells, which are sort of our reporter cells, we have a interferon gamma sensing reporter present. So we can now see that the moment that T cells see antigen in this little piece of the tumor, does that lead to interferon gamma sensing in the larger tumor at various distances? So this is then what such a tumor looks like, and these are just fluorescent markers present in these different tumor cell populations. So this is where T cells can see antigen, and this is the large part of the tumor where antigen is absent. And if we now look at the expression of this interferon gamma receptor signaling reporter, what you see is that there's this really nice gradient that starts at the site where T cells can see antigen, but then extends very large distances in the antigen negative part of the tumor. And we can then quantify this by looking at different brackets, different distance bins. And then what you see is, if you look at this graph, that at distances of 600 to 800 micron, still tumor cells, which by themselves do not have antigen, are being influenced by antigen recognition that occurs here in the left part of the tumor. So again, stressing this notion that we should not just think about T cells as being the ones that kill the neighboring cells, but cells that really alter the microenvironment. Yesterday, I put in a few additional slides because after Philippe's talk, the question came up, is this something that is peculiar, specific to interferon gamma, or does it also apply to TNF? And we've actually been trying to address that recently. So we've been trying to extend our analysis of cytokine spreading beyond interferon gamma. And initially, it was a little bit difficult because for interferon gamma, it is straightforward to design reporter systems that give you a fluorescent signal after interferon gamma receptor signaling. For TNF, that's not so straightforward. So what we did is a different approach, where we took tumor cells, then treated them ex vivo with different cytokines. I'm showing you here interferon gamma and TNF, or the combination. And what you then can see is that for each cytokine, or also cytokine combination, you have different patterns of genes that are upregulated. So here there are genes that are going up very much upon interferon gamma. These are genes that respond to TNF. These are actually genes that do not respond to TNF or to interferon gamma, but only the combination. So you can really design signatures that report on gamma, on TNF, or on the synergy between TNF and interferon gamma. Then after developing those signatures, we can then take single-cell sequencing data from tumor tissue, map these back to the model, and thereby, in this way, tell what did these tumor cells see. Did they see interferon gamma? Did they see TNF? Did they see the combination? And this is just a validation. So here we take tumors, and then we inject the cytokine to really understand that if the cytokine is truly present, do we see such a signal? Interferon gamma score, only when we inject interferon gamma or the combination of interferon gamma and TNF. TNF score, only present when we inject TNF or the combination of TNF and interferon gamma. Synergy score, not seen when we inject TNF or interferon gamma, but only when we inject the combination. So really, in an in vivo system, you're able to extract from single cell data which cytokine or cytokine combinations were seen. And then we can take tumors where we either have T cells recognizing antigen or not, and then look at the same signatures and see what those tumor cells were experiencing. Here, the top four panels are all controls. So here on the x-axis, I'm plotting the interferon gamma score. On the y-axis, I'm plotting the TNF score. So these are all individual cells, showing again that if you give interferon gamma and TNF, we see these cells move all the way to the top right, and the color here indicates the synergy score. These are two important panels, in vivo without T cells, in vivo plus T cells, and what you see is that the tumor cells move to the right. They are experiencing interferon gamma, consistent with our earlier data. but they don't really move to the top. So TNF really doesn't spread significantly in the tumor microenvironment. Clearly a distinct behavior than interferon gamma. And this is actually in spite of what one may have predicted, and probably I would have predicted, because what we know about the release mechanisms of TNF and interferon gamma is undergoing synaptic release directed towards the tumor cells, whereas TNF is secreted in a multidirectional manner. So just looking at the release mechanism, you would have predicted perhaps TNF would travel further than interferon gamma. But clearly, mechanism of release is not the major determining factor of what happens to a cytokine, how a cytokine is being sensed in a tumor microenvironment. So wrapping up this part, I think what these data show and argue for is how reactivation of dysfunctional T cells in the TME lights the fire and thereby drives T cell entry. What I think happens is the moment you block the PD-1, PD-L1 pathway, those cells that are already resident next to potential killing of tumor cells, which you do not visualize, they alter the tumor microenvironment through interferon gamma, they induce secretion of CXCL9, 10, and 11, chemokines that attract additional T cells, and this may in fact be the mechanism behind the clonal replacement that's been published by Howard Chang and others previously. So I think this clearly argues for a dominant role also of T cells that sit at the tumor site. Now, in the final part, I want to quickly move to more recent work where we started to look at functional heterogeneity within and between tumors. And this is still an area where there's lots of things to understand, but I think it's an important area because it shows there is an underappreciated heterogeneity. Okay, and maybe I should introduce this by sort of highlighting when we draw this cartoon, what we're basically saying is this is an ITIM receptor, the PD-1 is an ITIM receptor, and the moment that binding to PD-L1 brings this ITIM receptor in close proximity to the ITIM receptor, it prevents signaling, and we again allow that signaling the moment we block this pathway. And what then often sort of is ignored is what's downstream of this signaling, because the outcome of that signaling will depend on the cell state, will depend on which kind of T cell you are reactivating. And let me go back to a slide that I showed you earlier on, which is this heat map of non-responding and responding tumors. And what I sort of focused on was this fact that you can distinguish these two tumor types and that there's often an interferon gamma response. What I sort of ignored, but you probably will have seen, is that actually the pattern of response varies quite a bit between these different tumors, in which some tumors there's a dominance of, let's say, production of CXCL10. In other ones, there's a dominance of the Th-associated chemokines. And having these data, we wanted to understand, is this sort of stochastic noise? We're only sort of sampling a small part of the tumor, and if we would have sampled another part, we would have seen a different response. Or does it really truly reflect a difference between different tumors? So what we did is, again, these ex vivo PD-1 blockade experiments, and again, doing many cultures in parallel, but rather than pooling them, we now analyze them all separately to see whether if you take different pieces of the tumor, tiny fragments, do they all show the same response? And this figure was actually buried in the paper that we published last year, and I think it's probably one of the most underappreciated supplementary figures that I've published in the past few years, because I think this actually highlights an important biological point. What we did here is for three tumors, either did a whole set of separate control cultures, and you see very little variation there, or we did a set of cultures in the presence of anti-PD-1 for these different lung and melanoma tumors. And what you see is two important points. First of all, we see responding tumors, but we also see that not all tumor fragments do respond. And secondly, when tumor fragments do respond, the pattern of response is always the same, but it's different between tumors. So clearly there's heterogeneity within tumors that parts of the tumor are able to be reactivated by PD-1 blockade. But secondly, and maybe for me the most important point, that the type of immune reactivation has a distinct signature between individual patients. Now, I will not go further into detail about this fact that some tumor fragments do show this response and other ones do not. I can just speculate that this may be related to the presence of tertiary lymphoid structures, and maybe TLS are hotbeds of immune reactivation, and if we would have analyzed where TLS are located here, we could have seen such a difference. So that's something that we're currently working on. I do want to continue a little bit about this interpatient heterogeneity in response patterns, where we see that tumors have a unique signature in how immune activity is altered upon PD-1 blockade. So to do that, we've now extended our data set to over 180 tumors and more than 200 cultures. And what you now start seeing is, again, this subset of non-responding tumors and responding tumors, again, by unsupervised clustering. But also, because the data set is now much larger, we start to see structure also within the responding tumors, where we see just sort of four significant subgroups, which you call response cluster 1 to 4, that separate these different types of response patterns. What we then did is, we now, to make the data a little bit more accessible, we now start plotting the normalized means per response cluster. So for each response cluster, we take the normalized means per parameter, and then also included a number of parameters that we didn't include in this first analysis as sort of an independent validation to understand whether they would make sense, where they would end up. And that's shown in this slide. So now we have normalized means per response cluster, and we now have this non-responders, where again, everything is sort of not responding to PD-1 blockade, as you expect. And we have this response cluster 1 to 4, where what you see is that they have patterns that appear to reflect some part of the underlying biology. We have one response cluster that seems to be dominated by an interferon gamma response, chemokines, CXCL9, CXCL10. We have a second pattern that really seems to be biased towards Th cytokines, IL-17, IL-10, IL-4, IL-5. We have a third pattern that I don't quite understand. This is low in cytotoxicity. There seems to be CXCL11 present, also IL-8. And we have a fourth pattern, which I think is quite striking, which is really dominated by cytotoxic molecules, the granzymes, the soluble FAS ligand, perforin. And these two may be related to CD8 activity, although I do not quite know how I should then distinguish them. This may perhaps reflect CD4 reactivity, something that we're looking into further. I should stress, this is not explained fully by tumor type. Different individual tumor types, like melanoma, can show all the four different clusters. So what I think we should do is sort of move beyond just this part of the cartoon where we say we reactivate item receptor signaling, but we should also appreciate that within individual tumors, the effect of this reactivated item receptor is highly distinct. So, brings me to my conclusions. PD-1 blockade reactivates intratumoral immune cells, and this is predictive of clinical response. So it's not just a systemic response that you're reactivating. There's stuff happening at the tumor site. And this immune reactivation is at least in part due to the activity of dysfunctional T cells, exhausted T cells. Third point, coming back to this cytokine spreading through interferon gamma, PD-1 blockade turns intratumoral cells, including tumor cells, into what I could call enablers of the immune response, a phrase coined by Tony Ribas. And then finally, I briefly discussed with you the work that we're doing that shows heterogeneity in functional capacity. I think this is an area where we really need to learn more. There's spatial heterogeneity within individual tumors, maybe indicating a role of tertiary lymphoid structures. And there's distinct immunotypes. Different tumors respond in a different way to the same intervention, perhaps reflecting different tumor reactive T cell pools and with potential relevance for the development of combination therapies. With that, I'd like to close. Let me just again mention Daniela Tommen as one of the driving forces behind this work. This was work carried out by the following people in my lab, together with Jacob Verheyne and Laura Bornes, and my long-term clinical collaborators, Christian Blanc and John Hanen. Thank you for your attention.